Day, St. Charles Manufacturing versus Whirlpool. Mr. Merrican.
Good morning. Stephen Merrican. I'm here for Appellants, St. Charles. The primary question in this case is whether there is a genuine question over whether the no further remediation letter that was procured by Whirlpool is voidable. To show those that there is a question of fact about that, we submitted a detailed affidavit from a well-respected engineer, and we also submitted deposition testimony from the 30B6 witness for Whirlpool. Those both showed clearly that there is a question of fact about whether that NFR is voidable.
The original complaint in this case, as the other side points out, didn't mention at all this settlement agreement or the EPA letter. That seems sort of odd here, why that was.
Well, I think what we determined after that original complaint was filed, of course we're dealing with an amended complaint now.
Yeah, but that the whole case is about whether that settlement agreement was put an end to things here. And
the first agreement,
why wouldn't that have been in the first complaint?
The first agreement is also important because that agreement is the measure of our damages. If under Michigan law, which is what controls here, if there is a breach of the settlement agreement, that second agreement, that March 2000 agreement, we get the choice of measuring our damages pursuant to that March 2000 agreement or to go back to the earlier agreement. And it's that agreement we believe is going to measure our damages.
Well, that might all be true, but why would not the fact that there was a negotiated settlement agreement have been put in the complaint?
I think the original thinking simply was that the cleanup of the property hadn't been done correctly, and that's what was required under the original agreement, and that's what was sued under originally. Subsequently, we came to understand that we also needed to make at issue the subsequent settlement agreement. The problem in the district court is that the court held us to the wrong evidentiary standards. The court told us that, or ruled for summary judgment in Whirlpool's favor because some of the evidence it said was not conclusive. And of course, on summary judgment, we don't need to show conclusive evidence. The court said that that the Willis deposition testimony, Willis being Whirlpool's 30B6 witness, was ambiguous, which by definition, of course, means that it's given to two interpretations. And certainly that's not a basis for entering summary judgment for the defendant then. Our argument is this. No further remediation letter is voidable. And it's voidable because a great deal of information that should have been given to the IEPA was not. Information
under the settlement agreement, weren't you able to give information to the Illinois EPA?
The settlement agreement obligated Whirlpool to secure that.
Secure the approval, but
right.
Was there anything that prevented you from submitting something to it saying it hasn't been done, or it hasn't been done correctly?
We didn't know until sometime after the property was even sold that NFR was inadequate, that it is voidable. And that's why no one went to the EPA during the course. I mean, look, this was in the hands of Whirlpool and Whirlpool's consultant, also an engineer. And they were the ones responsible for securing that NFR. That's what the settlement agreement says. We didn't know until sometime after the property was sold, and we no longer had control of the property, that NFR was voidable. So our only recourse at that point is to sue Whirlpool.
If it's voidable, who has the authority to declare it void?
I'm sorry?
Who has the authority to void it? The Illinois EPA?
The Illinois EPA has authority to void it, but that's not what this lawsuit is about. We're not asking the court to void the letter. We are asking the court to acknowledge that the letter is voidable, and therefore Whirlpool, by giving us a voidable letter, did not comply with the March 2000 settlement agreement. Therefore, we have been damaged as a result.
Well, in light of Judge Sykes' question, why can't you go, or couldn't you have gone to the Illinois EPA and this letter was written in error, you didn't have all the information you needed, here's more information, and reconsider the issuance of the letter?
Well, we don't own the property anymore. I mean, that part of it isn't in our hands. This property was sold because we were in a position of, frankly, running out of money. And we sold it for the distressed price of $2 million in 2000 or 2001, sometime in that area, because we couldn't afford to maintain the property anymore. We originally put that property up for sale in the middle 1990s, and we received a number of bids on the property, which were withdrawn time and time again because the property was contaminated or was environmentally contaminated. Why was it environmentally contaminated? Because Whirlpool didn't clean it up pursuant to that earlier 1989 agreement. I see my time is up. I do want to reserve some time for rebuttal. Unless there are any further questions, I'll reserve the additional time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. American. Mr. Edenfield?
May it please the Court, my name is Scott Edenfield on behalf of Respondents Whirlpool and Whirlpool Kitchens. There are several undisputed facts in this case, and we believe that the undisputed facts in this case compel summary judgment in Whirlpool's favor. And for that reason, the order entered by the District Court should be affirmed. The undisputed facts in this case are these. On March 20th, 1989, Whirlpool conveyed to St. Charles the property that's at issue in this litigation. At that time, Whirlpool recognized that there were environmental conditions at the property and recognized and agreed in that contract that it would remediate the property into compliance with applicable state and federal law. Jump forward 11 years to March of 2000. At that time, St. Charles raised concerns that Whirlpool had not adequately performed its cleanup obligations under the March 1989 contract. The parties agreed to resolve their differences without resort to litigation through a settlement agreement. That settlement agreement was executed on March 7th of 2000. And through that settlement agreement, the two parties, St. Charles and Whirlpool, agreed to allow a third party, the Illinois EPA, an administrative body of the state of Illinois, to determine whether or not Whirlpool's remediation efforts were sufficient. The settlement agreement states that upon receipt of a comprehensive no further remediation letter from the Illinois EPA, St. Charles agrees to release Whirlpool from any and all claims in respect to pre-existing conditions at the property. On July 30th, 2002, the Illinois EPA issued a comprehensive no further remediation letter that applied to the property. Under the clear terms of the March 7th, 2000 settlement agreement, this affected a release of all claims based upon pre-existing conditions at the property. These were the facts that the District Court based its summary judgment ruling on, and for these very same facts, this court should affirm the district court's ruling.
Did the EPA, Illinois EPA, know at the time, or did they have an opportunity to submit to the Illinois EPA their concerns about the condition of the property?
Your Honor, if you review the record, you'll find that every submittal that was made to the Illinois EPA by Whirlpool in this case was copied to St. Charles. There's correspondence back and forth between St. Charles's environmental engineers and Whirlpool's engineers, Roy F. Weston. So, Your Honor, the plaintiffs were well aware of the process that was going on, the back and forth that was going on between Whirlpool's engineers and the Illinois EPA.
Would they have had standing, as it were, to be heard in that proceeding?
Your Honor, had they raised those issues with the Illinois EPA, I believe that the Illinois EPA would have addressed those. And, in fact, there is a procedure set forth by statute, which, as Your Honor mentioned earlier, the Illinois EPA can void a no further remediation letter. And we believe that if plaintiffs want to pursue this case, that's the proper route to take. They should bring their concerns to the Illinois EPA and allow the Illinois EPA to void the letter. If the letter were voided, as the district court pointed out in its order, this will be a very different case than what it is now.
And the grounds for the EPA to declare it void would be what?
One of the grounds specifically set out in the statute, and I believe that the citation is 415 Illinois Statute 55810E, sets forth specific grounds through which a no further remediation letter could be voided. And one of those grounds is that the no further remediation letter was obtained by fraud. So if the Illinois EPA were to pursue voidance through the procedure set forth by statute and were to find that this no further remediation letter was obtained through fraud, it could be voided.
Right. Are there any other grounds short of fraud? As I see the claim, there's sort of alleging two different things. One is fraud, but there isn't a whole lot pointing to that. But in any event, the other category of evidence that your opponent says constitutes grounds to void this letter has to do with inadequacy of the submissions or inaccuracy of the submissions that were made to the Illinois EPA. Is that a specific grounds?
I believe that it is, Your Honor. And again, those are set forth in subsection E, and it's an entire list of grounds. It's not simply based on fraud. There's an entire litany of grounds under that statute for which a no further remediation letter could be voided.
Does the Illinois EPA conduct an independent investigation, or does it rely on the submissions of the parties here?
The Illinois EPA, its beginning ground are the submissions. And the Illinois EPA is required by the Illinois Administrative Code specifically to review those submissions to determine whether or not they are sufficient and whether or not the testing that was undertaken by Whirlpool's engineers in this case is sufficient under the Illinois Administrative Code and under Illinois statute to allow the Illinois EPA to issue the no further remediation letter. So to answer your question, Your Honor, the Illinois EPA is charged with determining whether or not the materials it is presented with is sufficient.
They don't send their own investigator, some other third party to go out and take soil samples and do that sort of stuff.
Your Honor, I know that they have that authority. I do not believe the record in this case indicates whether that happened in this case or not. St. Charles's response to the evidence in this case that compels summary judgment is simply to argue that the Illinois EPA issued its letter based upon insufficient information. I believe that that argument ignores the role that the Illinois EPA played in this case. The parties selected the Illinois EPA through their contract to be a third-party arbiter of the sufficiency of the submissions. The sufficiency of the cleanup. Having selected and deferred to the Illinois EPA, St. Charles should not now be allowed to challenge the Illinois EPA's decision. The parties executed a contract making the Illinois EPA the sole arbiter. They entered this contract to avoid litigation expenses. The Illinois EPA was, in fact, the right third party to select. It's an administrative body that has scientific and technical expertise in the area. It's charged by the state with evaluating environmental concerns. And to accomplish its goal in protecting the environment in the state, it employs these individuals with scientific and technical expertise. As I stated earlier, there's an extensive statutory and regulatory regime in place, and that's set forth in Part 740 of Title 35 of the Illinois Administrative Code in Subpart E. That subpart requires the Illinois EPA to carefully evaluate the submissions that it's given. Section 740.510 specifically requires the Illinois EPA to evaluate the sufficiency of the site investigation report, including to determine whether or not the report is complete and whether the activities that were conducted at the site by Roy Weston, Whirlpool's engineers, were conducted in accordance with the code. Cases both in this circuit and in the Illinois state courts have held that when administrative agencies, such as the Illinois EPA, make decisions relying on their technical and scientific expertise, that those decisions should be deferred to. I believe that's especially important in this case, where the contract between the parties executed in March 2000 specifically deferred to the decision of the Illinois EPA. Also, it's important because, as we referenced earlier, there is a specific mechanism for resolution of this outside of court. The Illinois EPA may void the no further remediation letter. There's a specific statute that allows it to do so. There are specific grounds which the Illinois EPA could press in this case. The Illinois EPA has the authority to void the letter. And I'd like to just quickly address the statement made earlier by counsel in their opening argument. They stated that the issue in this case is whether or not the letter is voidable. I don't believe that's a fair statement of the issue, because any letter issued by the Illinois EPA, in some sense, could be voided. The question in this case is whether or not the letter should be voided, and that is a question that should be left to the Illinois EPA. The parties agreed in March 2000 to allow the Illinois EPA to resolve their differences. The Illinois EPA has not been consulted in this particular case to determine whether or not it believes that the letter should be void. And at the very least, plaintiffs should be required to have the letter voided by the Illinois EPA before pressing on here.
Thank you, Mr. Edenfield. Mr. Merrigan.
All of our evidence, without exception, that the letter, the NFR letter, is voidable, is unrebutted. It was unrebutted in the district court, and there is no argument whatsoever in Whirlpool's appellate briefs. Everything that William Thayer, our expert, says is unrebutted. They didn't take Thayer's deposition. They didn't offer an alternative opinion or another expert themselves. Every bit of evidence that the letter is insufficient, or I should say that the application for the letter is insufficient, is unrebutted. Yes, there is correspondence between the IEPA and Whirlpool's engineers, and yes, they did copy us on certain of that correspondence, but our clients aren't engineers. Our clients are businessmen. St. Charles, they're business people. They're not engineers, and they were relying on Whirlpool and Whirlpool's engineers to do what they were supposed to do under the settlement agreement, which is obtain an NFR letter that is not voidable. To answer your question, Judge, yes, the IEPA relies upon the submissions that are made to the agency. They do not send out their own people and take soil samples and test or anything like that. They don't know unless someone tells them.
But Mr. Edenfield tells us that everything that was sent to the Illinois EPA was copied to your client, so you knew the information that was being presented to the EPA.
Oh, well, I haven't seen that everything that was given to us that was given to the IEPA was sent to us, and I don't think you'll find that in the record either. In any event, though, the answer to your direct question is that if a submission to the IEPA does not include information about the building and the soil underneath the building and the 65%, they don't know. They're not told. And they rely on the submission that is made. One other point I want to make, and that has to do with the cases that they say, that they cite, say stand for the proposition that the deference should be given to the IEPA. Under certain circumstances, that is certainly true. All of those cases, though, that they cite are cases between a private party and the agency itself, whether it may or may not be the IEPA, it's some agency or other. That's not what we have here. Their cases involve a private party saying they were aggrieved because they didn't get certain relief from the agency. We're not saying that. This case is one private party against another private party, a common law action over the contracts that were signed by these parties. And then the IEPA, under those circumstances, isn't, or the decision of the IEPA is not due the same kind of deference, and giving it so would not even make sense in this case, where we're not asking for that NFR to be voided. We're asking for the court to acknowledge that it is voidable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merrican. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the third